The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber. This podcast has adverts, but if you prefer your podcast without, in the show notes, you'll see the link to my Patreon page and you can listen to our chats uninterrupted. Patreon also comes with many other benefits as well, including a Discord channel and private chats with me. But now, the show. This episode of Red Inca is about Australia's tour to Pakistan, so I got the person who made her own news while out there to tell us all about it.
Hi, my name's Melinda Farrell, and I'm the senior cricket writer for Sporting News Australia.
We talk about her horrible tweets, missing out on Pakistan in our careers, a different kind of tour, Imran Khan, meeting celebrities, becoming famous yourself, Mohammad Rizwan, Baba Azam, Usman Khawaja, and Miss Marvel. Before this tour, has one of your shit tweets ever ended up on the front page of a newspaper before?
No. And to be fair, I've put a lot of shit tweets out there in my time.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it was quite an amazing moment. I mean, before I went to Pakistan, I knew it was a big deal. Cricket was going back to Pakistan, obviously, like we all did. First time in 24 years, all that sort of stuff. And especially since, you know, England and New Zealand had cancelled their tours last year. But it's just bizarre. I tweeted about Baba Azam and it was a shit tweet. I just, you know, he played, it wasn't even a cover drive. That's the funny thing. People, you know, everyone talks about his cover drive. It was a straight drive. So it was at Rawalpindi, first test, he plays his beautiful straight drive. And I've just tweeted, you know, off the cuff, it was worth traveling halfway around the world to see that Baba Azam drive. Thought nothing of it. Probably did about 10 other shit tweets that day.
Obs.
Yeah, obs. And then the following day, I was actually sitting in the lobby of the Serena Hotel with Jeff Lemon, and we just sort of finished doing a video. And I got a message, and it was from a journalist at the Tribune Express, which is one of the major newspapers in Pakistan, sister newspaper to the New York Times, as it says on the front. And it was a picture of the front page. And I was on the front page, and I just went, holy shit. And Jeff was like, oh my God, what? He thought something really bad had happened. I said, I've got to go to the desk. And I went to the desk and I asked the staff, I said, oh, do you have a copy of the Tribune Express? And they pulled it out and they've looked down, they've looked up, and looked down, and they've looked up. And I'm wearing a mask, but they could still see. I'm like, yeah, I know, just give me the damn paper. And I walked away and there it was. It was a splash. So it was right across the top. It was like the banner across the top. They Google imaged a picture of me sort of laughing, head back laughing with the tweet there. And below me was Imran Khan fighting for the prime minister position. Below this tweet was Putin and the Ukraine. And I was so flabbergasted that I left my handbag in the lobby because I went back up to my room and didn't realize I'd left my handbag in the lobby till the next day. Got it back. Everything was fine, of course. But yeah, I was just really blown away. It was the first time I really realized, oh my gosh, this really is a big deal, because you can know it intellectually, but it's certainly not until you get there that I think that you really understand, you feel it in your bones, and you really understand on so many more levels just how important that tour was and how important it is to cricket, and not just to cricket, to people in Pakistan, to have international cricket back there.
Mel, Vladimir and Imran together at last. But
yes, it's probably the only time that we'll ever be on the same page of a newspaper.
I hope. I don't know what the other one sounds like, an awful newspaper headline if you manage to get back at it.
Googlies, quarter seamer, carom, dukes, back of the hand, red, leg cutters, teesra, pink, knuckle, white, slider, seed, heavy, bouncers, cherry, length, pill, off cutters, old, crimson traveller, kookaburra, hard, outswing, second new, off spin, arm, SG, split finger, shiny, leg spin, soft, new, yorkers, flippers, wrong-uns, long hops, reverse swing, half volley, and third new. These are just some of the names we use for balls in cricket. Well, Manscaped wants you to be as proud of your balls as you are of the ones delivered by your favourite cricketer. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Insert the code REDINCA at manscaped.com. I've actually used this, not just something that I'm hawking for fun. And I got to admit, I thought it was a bit silly. And then I went down there and it was exceptional. I honestly feel I could bowl outswing with one nut and inswing with the other. So get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code REDINCA at manscaped.com. Manscaped, for the man who cares about his balls as much as the ones out in the middle.
I kind of feel like our entire generation of cricket writers kind of missed out on Pakistan. For me, cricket in Pakistan was, you know, those hazy old images that we used to see in cameras. We didn't even always get footage. Everyone's used to Pakistan cricket Twitter because that's a massive thing. But that isn't Pakistan as a country. The footage you see on CNN is also not Pakistan, the country, right? What were your thoughts going in, other than the fact that it was another, you know, passionate fan base?
I mean, I had a pretty open mind, I think, and partly because I've done quite a bit of traveling in the Middle East. So yep. I'm very conscious of the fact that often what we see in the Western media is not the reality of living in a country, because you go to some of these countries and you only get a certain view of it, you know, on TV news, and then you get there and it's actually just people, you know, going to school, going to work, getting
They're
on with their
lives. Living normal lives.
Exactly.
Someone wants to get the milk.
Yeah, I know. People have birthday parties, do all sorts of things. And, of course, I knew a lot of Pakistani people through covering cricket. So I've obviously got some good friends and colleagues who are from Pakistan. So, you know, and they're normal too, strangely enough. So
hello, mammals. So, yeah,
exactly. Except that Osman Samuddin, he's a bit weird. Wow. But so I had a pretty open mind. I guess what I wasn't so sure about, and, you know, probably other people were more concerned about me. People were asking me before I left, Australians, if I was going to have to wear a burqa. In fact, people asked me after I came back if I'd had to wear a burqa, and I was like, no, I just wore really unflattering baggy clothes because, you know, that was hot. And
so, I'm sorry, I don't understand what the difference is to a normal tour for you.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people still had that idea in their head that's incredibly strict as far as women go and clothing and all that sort of thing. And no, it's actually, there's a massive, massive range. So plenty of people wearing Western clothes, some who wear shalwar kameez, some who cover their full head of hair, others who don't at all. Like, so that sort of didn't surprise me that much. I guess the biggest thing that I didn't know about was going to be the level of security, because that had been such a massive focus of the previous tours. And we had a lot of back and forwards with the PCB about security arrangements, and there were things that they wanted us to do, and, you know, they like wanted us to stay in the team hotel, for example. There was discussion back and forth about whether or not we were going to be in the bubble as a whole, if we were going to have to be part of the convoy to the grounds, whether we were going to be allowed out of the hotel with security at all. So that was probably the biggest thing beforehand, because we didn't really want security like that, but we also wanted to respect what the PCB wanted, because the tour meant so much to them. Mm. And they were signing off on our visas and putting their letters and everything. So it sort of took a bit of chatting to work out what the level of security was going to be. And in the end, we didn't have any security. There were a couple of times that I went out with security, because I went with people who had the various protocols involved with that. And I'm glad I didn't have to do that the whole time, because that actually made me more nervous than not having security. Because at one point, I went to the Wagga border with the head of Australian security. So I got into an armour-plated bus with some other people, like a mini bus that was armour-plated and you know, double doors. It's like getting inside of a tin can, and I felt really claustrophobic. And I said, like, what does this withstand? And one of the guys told me, oh, it's built to withstand sustained fire from an AK-47. That made me more nervous than anything else.
That's what I want to hear before I get in something, that we've done this because we expect sustained fire from an AK-47 is the first part of that. But yeah, I mean, that's incredible. But just on many, I mean, you got COVID, I know you got security, not specifically for you, but a lot of security around, obviously, around the ground specifically.
Massive.
Wi-Fi bans, I think, between the grounds. So it's not in any way like a normal cricket tour for you.
No, it wasn't like a normal cricket tour for starters. So it was a small group of us. And because we were pretty much all staying in the same hotel, and they were expensive hotels, so we had freelancers bunking in with full-timers. So I had Izzy Westbury bunking in with me while she was there for the first test. So it was very close-knit. We got cars together, and you had to time your run everywhere, to and from training, to and from the ground, because, I mean, the convoy was unbelievable. There were decoy buses. It felt like there were about 200 vehicles that went. And if you timed it wrong, you just got stuck, because they closed the roads and then the Wi-Fi network would go down, so you couldn't get online. So if you mistimed it, like we did a couple of times, you ended up just by the side of the road with no sort of access to the internet, just, you know, having to wait while it all happened and then hope the traffic wasn't too bad afterwards. So it definitely wasn't a normal tour like that. So we ended up as a very small band, trying desperately to get Jeff Lim and Barrett to meet us on time so that we could leave on time to get to the ground and get back home again. So it wasn't quite as free as other tours in that way, just because we had to stick together and you had to try and always beat that convoy.
Crazy. Also, I was in Sri Lanka when it looked like Rajapaksa was going to come back to power, and was it late 2018? And I was in peak Rajapaksa area of Sri Lanka before one of the test matches, and suddenly you're like, oh, I could be here when there's a coup. And, you know, and newspapers going, will there be a coup and all this sort of stuff? And you're like, I'm now going to have to really take care of what's happening and not go out. And, you know, there were areas we couldn't go. I remember TalkSport were terrified that, you know, we'd go out and we'd get caught in, you know, some, not an uprising so much, but like people taking to the streets or, you know, anything like that. And Imran Khan was going through some political stuff while you were there. So you're already in Pakistan. It's already not like another tour. And then you're just like, wait a minute, is Imran about to be dismissed? See what I did there, cricket term.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously it hasn't gone in the way that many people thought it would have, but that's going to be on your mind anyway. When you tour any country and something weird happens, you start to go, oh, am I in the right place at the right time?
So it was funny. I mean, there was also a bombing in Peshawar while we're in Islamabad, which isn't that far from Peshawar either. But to be honest, that's where the massive amount of security was. It just felt like that was far, far distant from us. And I just couldn't see how anyone was going to get past that security. So it didn't worry me at all. As tragic as it is, I don't want to play down the tragedy either of what happened there. The Imran Khan thing was really weird and interesting, because from the time we got to Islamabad, the politics was entering the cricket. So we had the minister of, I think it's like the minister of the interior, or he's really big, the sheikh, quite a sort of, I don't know, cult figure, if you like. He came into the press box. And honestly, he walked in and there were about 30 security people around him. All the journalists, Pakistani journalists, suddenly went mad taking videos and everything. And he kind of made this speech about how they made Australian cricket come to Pakistan and all the security was great. And then he left. And it was like, what just happened? And then the next thing, the Minister of Information comes into the press box and makes a big speech about us being there. So another, you know, really major politician. At one point, he looked at me and said, how are you finding Pakistan? And I couldn't think of what to say. And I said, oh, it's really nice. There's a lot of meat here. You people really like meat, don't you? What did I just say? I just, you know, had a bit of a blank. But, yeah, so the politics was already in there. And when it got to the bit, you know, where Imran Khan was making speeches, I think people around were very aware as well that, you know, a lot of the positions in the PCB are political positions. And so there's often, if there's a change in government, there's often a change in you know, various personnel. So, you know, that was all around it too. So when he was making speeches, there suddenly, at times, the cricket broadcast went off and Imran's speeches in Parliament came on. And so, of course, they had to change their matches and move them from Islamabad to just have all the white ball matches in Lahore. So that was the main way that it affected us in the end. But people kept saying to us, oh, don't go anywhere this day because there's going to be big marches in the street and you won't be able to move and it'll all be really dodgy. It just didn't happen that we saw it. And we went out. But whether or not we just happened to miss various times or whatever, the rest of the country, again, was just sort of going on life as normal.
Mm.
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live. Because you shouldn't have to change teams, even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto-renews.
The other interesting thing is that most cricket cultures, there are famous hangers-on around cricket. Yeah, Mick Jagger was at the Ireland test. Do you remember?
I remember that. He was at every test that summer. He was everywhere. He was in Wales.
Yeah, they had a security car at the back that was running. They had to keep the engine running from him. And we weren't allowed to take photos of him. Do you remember? It was so weird. Anyway, so we're used to that in England. There's lots of famous people. Australia has lots of famous people. The difference is that I would assume being the Australians coming over to Pakistan, that you were involved in that. And I'm only saying that because I've read your article where you talked about hobnobbing it with the elites of Pakistan's film industry.
That was quite an experience. I mean, look, there were a couple of different types of things. So at one point, PTV, which is like the ABC or the BBC, got me to come in. I thought I was coming in to do a 5 or 10 minute chat about the cricket. And it turned out it was a half hour show that was kind of about me.
Is that on YouTube? Can I subscribe to this channel?
But this was, and I just didn't even realize. I was like, oh, I kept trying to say, you know, it's not about me, it's about the cricketers. But then I was, you know, also understanding that this is a big deal to have people come over and cover cricket and be a normal part of it. But yeah, the other one, and it was amazing because the previous night we'd been out to Burns Road, which is a food street, if you like, really famous. All street food, everyone. We were the only Westerners there, you know, especially me with my blonde hair and everything. But it was brilliant. We went and we had our really cheap food. We spent probably about $2 on dinner and went home. And then the next night, I'd had a message from someone at the PCB saying, oh, can you go downstairs for dinner at 8:30? And it was 8 o'clock. And I was like, oh, I wasn't going to have dinner. But I went down just wearing my baggy clothes, you know, hadn't brushed my hair, no makeup, just went downstairs. I thought we were eating in the hotel. And so there must have been someone from the PCB wanted to chat about something. Anyway, it ended up being someone came and ushered me into a car. And the next thing, we're going through the streets of Karachi by this stage, you know, 9 o'clock at night. And we ended up at the house of Shamino Bey Chinoy. Now, Shamino Bey Chinoy is a film director. She was the first Pakistani to win an Oscar. She's won two of them for directing documentaries. And she was having like just a soiree, a house party,
a
basically.
Soiree. I can't believe you
it
said
was
that.
A soiree, I'm telling you. And the artworks, everything that was there, everyone was so chic and trendy. And there's me in my, you know, bag of things. And I, you know, not really knowing what to say. Her husband is a massive cricket fan, so he just wanted to talk about cricket. Her sister, who's Adele, she's brilliant. She's on the cricket board there, and she started up this thing called Kilo Cricket and doing it during Ramadan where they have girls playing cricket at night. She's an absolute go-getter, massively into cricket. But then there are other people, like this guy I was talking to, couldn't believe that I'd gone to Burns Road the night before. He said, oh, we can't really go out to dinner because my wife's such a famous actress that she just gets hassled all the time. And I didn't know who anyone was, so it was all going over my head. But probably the funniest thing was when Shameen sat down and we were having a chat. I knew that she directed these documentaries, thank God. So I said to her, are you working on another documentary? And she said, I'm doing this commercial. And we're filming a commercial this weekend in Lahore. And she said, I've actually just finished filming a series for Disney. And I said, oh, okay, what series? And she said, Ms. Marvel. So the new Marvel series.
Oh, yeah, because that's a Pakistani superhero, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And so they've got three Pakistani directors, and she's one of them. So she's literally just wrapped on this, you know, it's going to be this massive, huge series. And all like, you know, it's a bit like you guys have lots of meat. I said to her, you'll appreciate this. I said to her, oh, yeah, I used to work for Disney.
I thought you could have gone worse. I thought you could have said something like, I've seen the Avengers.
I didn't say that. But there was a thing. So there was something in one of the rooms. There was like this, it was set up like a suit of armor. But it was, I was looking at it going, that looks like it's from a Marvel film, but I don't recognize it. And so then I realized afterwards, maybe that's actually from the Ms. Marvel series. So I'm going to have to watch it with interest to see if it was. But yeah, so I've gone from being out on the street having street food to being in this really chic society. And so I, you know, the level of contrast was amazing, as it would be in a lot of countries, you know, if you get invited to the right sort of circles. But it was just really unexpected.
But we don't.
I never do. And so like about midnight, went home and I just sat there going, what the hell just happened? I don't understand.
I had a moment. Mine's a little bit more crickety than yours, not quite as Marvel's related. But I ended up at Kumar Sangakkara's house one night. Right? Mm. And mm-hmm. I was walking in with a big former player who's like, and he turned to me, and this was like a famous, like, I don't want to out him, but a very famous cricketer. Everyone would know him if I said it. And he looked at me and goes, how weird is it we're walking into Kumar Sangakkara's house? And I was like, I mean, if you're saying that, what the hell do you think I feel, right? So I understand that sort of level of that. The other thing that I found really interesting, especially the first week, there was a lot of photos of very pasty white people wearing very traditional different outfits and hats and scarves and everything. It does get a little bit like bad politician on tour at times. And you don't want to say no to those people because it means a lot to them to get a photo with you. And you did a million selfies, as you know, a lot of us have when we've traveled, especially the subcontinent. You don't want to say no to anyone. So you try and do it all. Then they put on the hat and the coat or whatever clothing it is. And you look a bit like, I'm trying to phrase this in the nicest possible way to you and Colo and the others who I saw in these photos. But, you know, you look a little bit like you're invading the culture. And it's a really interesting balance, though, isn't it, that you only really get, and I would have assumed in Pakistan, that would have been dialed up 20.
Yeah, it was. And especially because each of the sports journals, associations, it's quite amazing that their sports journalist associations are obviously far bigger than anything we have. Because at one point I was sitting, I think it was when we were in, Rawalpindi. But it happened at every place. You would sit there and there'd be 10 people introducing themselves and everyone was a former president or secretary of the Sports Journalists Association. Literally every single person. So the associations are big and they really wanted to present us with gifts. I was given personally a lot of gifts as well as some of the other stuff we were given. And often there would be a speech involved as well. And look, it was all about hospitality and That's what it was all about. It was overwhelmingly genuine. They really wanted us to feel welcome. Not only was there the gifts, there was a constant offer of, if you need anything, please let me know. Let me know if I can do anything for you. Not just from the journalists, people in the street, just the military and the police, like everybody, just everybody wanted to make sure you were okay. Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things. And you do want to make sure that you're respectful and everything as well. So I figure if people are presenting you with something as a gift to wear, I don't think that that's a offense. Like, you're not going in and trying to, I don't know.
No, no. But also, even it's more offensive if you say no, but there's a certain point where you end up with 20 photos or the PTV thing. I've had similar things over my career. I don't think I've ever had it with that big. But first time I went to an IPL game and I went in and I was literally seven different people interviewed me about me being at an IPL game.
Yeah.
And this was very early on in the IPL. You know, these days there would be plenty of Western journalists, I would assume, that would probably go through. But at that stage, it was a very rare thing. And you feel uncomfortable because we're the people who write about the story. We're not the story. Now we're the photo. You know, you see Izzy Westbury's video where she gets interviewed by a person about how women in Pakistan make the tea for us. And all, and it's like she has to smile her way through an interview where she probably kind of wanted to punch a guy in the nose a little bit. You know, and there are different situations where we're not famous people, you and I, Mel. Right?
Well, that's
we don't
right.
get stopped on the street, right? We're not used to that. And you go into that environment and you do get stopped on the street.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just all of that, especially in that first week. And it did, like, I lost count of the number of interviews that I did with various people and, you know, asking me to sing Dil Dil Pakistan, for example, you know, all that sort of stuff. Yes, yes, I know. But that's what I mean by you can know intellectually it's a big deal, but it's only when you experience all of that that you really do realize, God, these people have been starved of cricket. And so anyone coming in and making them for that series, you know, the center of cricket is just, it's just massive. And in other parts of the subcontinent, yes, it's a big, you know, you do get the selfies and stuff as well, but this was just a different level. I mean, people made signs for us at the ground. You know, there'd be people holding up signs that they'd made for us. And you'd go out onto the balcony, there'd be all these people, you'd love this. So not only were people waving, people were looking up at me and doing this. Because
there must be a way for us to make money off that, Mel.
I know, because I'd watched Polite Inquiries. So, I mean, all of that was just, it was really overwhelming. And, you know, maybe it's something that will change as cricket hopefully becomes normalised in Pakistan and it'll become a new thing. I mean, even the fact that I met, you know, some of our colleagues at Cricinfo that I'd been colleagues for years and it was the first time I'd met them. That was also really bizarre when, you know, meeting Umar Farooq Carlson and Daniel as well. It was like, how's it happen that you realise they've actually just mostly being in that one spot covering cricket and never getting sort of around to other places or having cricket there. So hopefully it will become normalized. And, you know, I look forward to going back and seeing, you know, how things might change. I think it wouldn't have been so intense if New Zealand and England hadn't pulled out last year. I think that intensified the attention a lot more because there are a lot of people who didn't believe Australia were coming and were going to play until they were halfway through the first test, essentially.
Yeah, well, I booked other work, Mel, because I thought there was no way that series was going ahead. I wasn't going to be caught short as a freelancer. So I booked the West Indies-England series knowing that that would happen. So I was surprised. Let's talk a little bit more about the ground. That first test, it felt like it was a celebration of, well, Pakistan cricket coming home. And we know that other teams have played. So we know, you know, West Indies and Zimbabwe, other teams have been there. We're not taking away from that. But because of what happened with England and New Zealand, and also because of the fact that Australia was the first team to stop going to Pakistan, right?
Yeah.
Well before everyone else, which I've written about many times over the years, I think Andy Bickle was the one who came out and said, yeah, the sort of stuff we didn't go for was unjustifiable when you really break it down. He said something along that. I don't want to put words into Andy Bickle's mouth, but essentially that was a celebration test on what was one of the worst cricket pitches you could find. But it really was a celebration test, that first one, wasn't it?
And that was it. It was a shame that the pitch wasn't great because, well, it was officially below average, wasn't it? It was a shame because everything else was absolutely spot on, perfect. The tone, everything had been great. And, you know, even having Usman Khawaja there and having his sort of homecoming story, and then, you know, he missed out on the century. But talk about the welcome given to us. I mean, the welcome given to the players, and they felt it. Like, the players really felt it. And I've thought about this a lot. I don't think I have ever covered a series involving Australia that has been played in such great spirit. And people were almost like taking the mick out of it in the end. You can be cynical about it, but it was genuine. Like, the players got it. The players really understood how important this was. And because it came across through everyone, through staff everywhere, through the other Pakistan players as well, through the questions that Usman Khawaja was being asked by journalists, all of it, that the players got it. So it did have kind of a real sense of occasion about it that kind of came through in so many different ways. And I do think that actually had an effect on the players. And I think they accepted their role. As you were saying, you know, we accept our role as sort of, you know, wanting to be the good guests and everything. The players sort of accepted their ambassadorial roles, particularly Usman Khawaja, I think. And that made it really interesting. The pitch was, it was like, damn it, you know, it sort of took the wind out of the sails a little bit of the whole thing. And I'm quite conscious of not just saying that a pitch that isn't like a pitch in Australia is a bad pitch, you know. So we weren't talking about that at all. I think there's possibly a bit of a lack of understanding about Pakistan test pitches too, because there's been relatively little test cricket played there in, you know, the past 25 years. Certainly past 20 years. That sense of celebration and occasion definitely came through. And it was even coming through from just everybody. You get out of the car and you walk there, and the number of people who stopped and said, thank you so much for coming to our country, really means a lot to us. You just heard it all the time. So definitely the players, I think, realised that as well.
So on the field, outside of Ramesh Raja's spicy wickets, incredibly exciting cricket that we saw, we did see some good performances, obviously. Mohammad Rizwan and Babar Azam, flat pitch or not, that was incredible, wasn't it?
That was absolutely amazing. That was most certainly one of the highlights. And yeah, there were good performances, and yeah, obviously batting-wise, you got like your Imam Al-Haq and Abdullah Shafiq, I think, played really well for them as well. But you expect you're probably going to get some higher scores on those pitches, but it was the nerve that Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan showed in that test, because it was flat, yes, but there was something more. There was a bit more going on in that test. It was doing a little bit more, and I think the players were really, especially when Australia were really discovering how to make the ball reverse again. And so you saw some really good...
What happened last time? Let's not worry about it.
Exactly. But that sort of made it, you know, a little bit more exciting as well. But yeah, that was just one of those sort of epic feats of just determination. A little bit like a different, but that's the same sort of feeling that you had, say, with Johnny Bairstow at the SCG, where it was just like, you know, bloody mindedness, not going to stop. And then the fact that they were just able to do what they did and take it in a way that you sort of were like, oh, will they, won't they? Is there a chance here? And you kind of knew deep down that there wasn't. But the fact that they made it so exciting until that last day and kept it there, I actually really, really enjoyed that test. I thought it was fantastic, absolute classic. And there were lots of lovely Babar Azam drives that were worth travelling halfway around the world to see.
And tweeting about. Usman Khawaja, it's funny, I was just asked to be on another podcast and they were talking about Australian cricket and sort of the working class origin of Australian cricket compared to the other cricket cultures around the world. And I said, if you look back, that Australian cricket's been very good at bringing in people from other backgrounds, non-traditional cricket backgrounds. But we haven't been particularly good with the Asian population, especially someone who grew up with everyone was a Sri Lankan cricketer in Melbourne. You know, the Agars, Stuart Clarke, I think his mother was Indian, if I remember correctly, Dav Watmore, Gurinder Sandhu. Usman Khawaja is like the star of that group. He's obviously had his own problems up and down with his career. It feels like he goes through these periods where he looks like he can't go out before. We've seen those. And then he goes through another period where he looks like he can't make a run. But it does feel like it was quite special that it all happened where it happened for him.
It's one of those amazing things where just the stars all aligned. You know, he had that opportunity to come back into the side during the Ashes, replacing someone who looked like he was absolutely undroppable in Travis Head, you know, scores 150, looks amazing. So it was when Khawaja comes in, all of a sudden makes himself undroppable. Because starting off by, you know, with twin centuries at the SCG, all of a sudden you just, how do you drop him? I mean, he was always in the picture to play on this tour. That was always on the cards. But he just started this beautiful run leading into it and just kept going. And it was like he was really born to play this tour. He was outstanding. Just everything he did, he just looked so relaxed. He looked like he was in from the moment he walked out there. And I just think it's a perfectly timed run for him at this time when Australia, you know, they're going to Sri Lanka, they're going to India and playing these test matches. It is a no disrespect to Marcus Harris, but you do see Usman Khawaja out there when he's in this vein of form and kind of form and think, not just Marcus Harris, you look back at a bunch of other openers Australia have used in sort of the past 3-4 years and think, he just looks in his current form. He just looks miles better. Mm. He really does. So, you know, and there are obviously times he hasn't looked that good. But it just sort of felt like it was one of those things that was made for cricket writers to write romantic stories, you know, so the fairy tale kind of thing. So because you had him coming home to Rawalpindi and then you had him going to Karachi, which was the land of the Khawajas, and he had his relatives there. And by the time he got to Lahore, it was, you know, everyone kept saying to me, he's one of yours, but he's also one of ours. So there was a real appreciation, I think, of what he represents in being a child of two cultures, I guess. Yeah, especially when he was being asked questions in Urdu, and he answered questions in Urdu as well. That obviously meant a lot to people too.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's incredible to be sort of a totem in two different countries, isn't it, at a similar time and be so important. Australia win, it's a really important win for Australia. They haven't played overseas since 1987, as far as I can remember. They hadn't been particularly good when they had played overseas consistently for a long time. When I did my World Test Championship odds, I thought Pakistan would make the final and I thought they would win at least 1/2 of these tests. They've ended up with none. So it's a huge problem for Pakistan. And I go back to those pitches. It's like the absolute wrong kind of pitches to be setting up. From Pakistan's point of view, though, even though that's true and even though they did lose that series, it's really tried to say, you know, cricket is the winner and everything. But there was absolutely no doubt there was a lot of young, angry fans on Twitter who were like, oh, I'm sick and tired of everyone saying Pakistan's the winner. But there was a lot of people who just felt like the fact that this series happened was a huge step forward for Pakistan.
Well, like I said, it is easy to be cynical about it. I can tell you there was a lot of relief. By the time that final day was over, there was a lot of relief, certainly around the PCB, in that, you know, we pulled it off. Like, we actually got through it and everything was okay. So, yeah, I think that was really important for them first and foremost, was just to get it on there. And I thought the interesting thing, yes, okay, so it ended up, you know, only having the one win. I kind of thought that Australia were really smart, and it was a quite a fascinating start to the Andrew McDonald, who now, you know, was only interim but now is definitely in the job, between him and Pat Cummins in how they wanted to do it. And the way they kept talking about it being a 15-day test, and they had to be patient and hold their nerve all the way through to the 15th day.
It did sometimes feel like a 15-day test.
It did sometimes. Rawalpindi felt like a 15-day test, I'm telling you. At least 15. But the fact that they did that and they had a plan and they had the tactic and they also had the faith in their bowlers in particular, that they would be able to do it when it came to it, when the final point came. So for me, even though there were some long days, and it's rare that you get 3-test series where every test goes for 5 days as well, but I just thought that was all really interesting and made it a fascinating series for me. You know, I thought the second test was an exciting draw. The first test wasn't an exciting draw. And the final test was a real cat and mouse game in so many ways, when you were looking at, you know, setting targets and you know, declaring and all that sort of stuff. It was quite, I don't know, interesting, a real chess game that you just had to wait until the final moment. But, yeah, it did feel in the end as though look, this is an achievement. We've done this. It's important, obviously, mostly important for Pakistan. But just also, you know, Australia have been talking about wanting to be good global citizens for a couple of years now. This is like feels like the first time in a long time that they've walked the walk. So hopefully that's kind of significant for Australia as well, because that's good for world cricket if Australia aren't going to be the reticent travellers that they have been in the past whenever there were issues within a country. So at the end, it did feel like there was a lot to really love about this series. Obviously, I was looking at it from a different point of view. For me, I loved it because I was there and it was just the whole experience of being there. And, you know, I was just sitting there going, I can't believe I'm watching Shaheen Shah Afridi bowling here or Babar Azam batting like this here in Pakistan. It's just totally different. Even though I've watched them play many times in other countries or on TV, it's different to actually be there and see those players performing in front of their home crowd.
In your article, you talk, I think, quite early on about people saying, you don't know how much this means to us. You know, Pakistani fans and Pakistani non-fans, humans, normal Pakistanis, you know, not even Oscar winners, just normal Pakistanis on the street. And by the end, did you get it? Did you understand what it meant to Pakistan culture, especially with what was happening with Imran Khan at the same time?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know if I get it to the same level because it made me realize how much I have taken for granted sitting here in Australia or in England or in other countries watching international cricket. So it brought that home to me. There was an 18-year-old guy who I met in Lahore. So I was walking to the press box and he stopped, asked if he could have a selfie. You know, he knew me from my work and he was just so excited to meet me and was one of the people who said, thank you so much for coming to this country. It means so much to me. And he said to me that when he was a kid, he used to ask his dad what the Gaddafi Stadium was for because he didn't know what it was for. And this was his first time being at a test match, was for this game. Because, of course, you know, while it has come back to cricket, Lahore hadn't hosted a test. And the fact that it was Lahore and it was where the attack happened and everything, there was, you know, you talk about a sense of occasion and everything else. It was very much there at Lahore as well because of the history. So to meet this incredibly polite and lovely 18-year-old who didn't even know what the stadium was for, and was just like, you could see he was quite emotional at being there. And he was excited to meet me, even though I'm some schmuck from Nowheresville, because he'd seen me covering cricket in other places in the world. And so there was suddenly that connection, sense of connection to the whole cricket world. And that stayed with me a lot because it just made me realize how much I have taken for granted being able to watch cricket. And I think, you know, most of us have. If we want to, we can go and watch an international match. We get bloody well paid to go there. So we especially do, you know. But even for other fans, you know, it might be expensive. For some people, it might be too expensive, but you still have an opportunity to see international cricket in your own country. So that's probably what it really, really sunk in, I think, for me. Even though I'd been there for a while, I just thought, wow, yeah, okay, I've taken this for granted.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, J-Rod.
Thank you for listening. There is more information on my guests in the show notes. Please support them where you can, but also support us. If you can't help out on Patreon, every single review, share, or word of mouth suggestion to your friend helps us. However, this podcast is made available by the people who support us at Patreon, so thank you to all of those who do. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. Red Inker is made by me, Jared Kimber. Nick McCorriston makes the best audio anyone can from random Zoom calls. Mukunja Banreddy is in charge of our video side. Orijoti Senpathi turns the files into video podcasts. And Shubhanka Bhattacharya makes our graphics. Our theme tune is called The Prisoner by the Red Crickets.
Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.